Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Australia goes down fighting the Netherlands and Argentina through to the final eight, and we will take a look at the matches to come. I'm your host, Amy Duggan. This is the Optus Sport podcast. Let's get into the Gegenpod. It's great to be joined by a couple of legends of the game today. No doubt all feeling very proud of Australia's performance, but also a little heartbroken after this morning's result. A big welcome to Tommy Orr, part of the Socceroos 2014 World Cup team. Great to have you on, Tommy.
Pleasure to be back. Thank you.
And Michael Bridges with 87 Premier League appearances and 21 goals and just the one hat trick. I do have to ask, have you left the couch all month yet, Bridgie? I seem to connect with you and you're in the same spot day in, day out.
What is the point in moving from the couch when you've got four games on in the whole day? Now we're obviously down to two, going to the round of 16. Yeah, the kids keep walking past on the way to school and just looking in the door saying, Dad, we'll see you after school. And the wife, well, yeah, she just locked us in the room. So it's been absolutely brilliant. I am worn out because it was the last game. Obviously, the Socceroos, we are going to cover it. They came so close and I think I kicked every ball and headed every ball from the lounger.
With them. So you've done your exercise for today anyway.
Yep.
All right. And also, despite it being the earlier hours of the morning now in Qatar, Mark Schwarzer will hopefully be joining us live, even if it's from the car coming to us after the game. But we will get on. Let's talk about this tournament for Australia. Obviously, the result is disappointing. The Argentinians were just and only just too good in the end. But where was this game won?
Yeah, obviously, I thought the way we set up for this game was, you know, it was a similar theme to the previous game against Denmark. I thought we really frustrated them, and the first 20-30 minutes of the game were fantastic. I can't really recall a single chance that they created, and you know, as the time kind of wore on, we started to get more and more joy with the ball, and you know, had some set piece pressure and these types of things. And yeah, I thought that, you know, to give away the free kick the way we did and for them to score before half time was a little bit disappointing, and I think the boys will be a bit, filled with regret with how that happened, because it was, you know, maybe a little bit preventable. But I mean, it is difficult to be too critical because we put our, you know, heart and soul into the game and we were immense once again, but we came up just short.
I've got to say, there was two things and two moments where we lost the game. One was 1,000 matches in his career for Messi, and what does he go and do? He decided to turn it on to the Messi show. I've just been watching the highlights in the analysis after the game here in England, and they were just showing his dribbles, his run rate, how he turned it on and what he was doing. And when he's on like that, you know, he's so hard to stop. I know Bates tried to get into him, Bacchus left one on him early doors, trying to leave their mark and stamp on the game, saying, we're going to show you no respect. But he found a way. And I thought his goal, his touch was sublime. Like you just said there, Tommy, it was from the free kick. He just followed his pattern of play into the box. They found his feet. He slotted one home. In the other area, I've got to say, it was Matty Ryan's mistake at the back. You know, he's so good. His distribution normally, his feet are so good. And at that moment, he got pressed so well. And he ran out of ideas. And unfortunately, they were the two sucker punches. It was Messi in his 1,000th game and a mistake by Matty Ryan. But the rest of it, I thought they were absolutely superb. Tommy's talked about the tactics. We got it spot on, disciplined, and had a crack and almost got the extra time at the end with Garang Kuol coming on. And unfortunately, it wasn't to be.
Let's just walk through a few of these moments, because you've obviously mentioned Messi's goal. It was just individual brilliance in his 1,000th game. Also, his first knockout stage goal at a World Cup. So there's a little interesting stat for you. But Tommy, or Matt Ryan's moment, he will want back, that is for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I feel obviously really sorry for him, because he's been one of our standout performers in this tournament. And, you know, like Bridgie just touched on, you know, playing out from the back, that's one of, you know, the main parts of his game and his biggest strengths. And I guess it was just you know, one lapse in concentration or one error of judgment, and at that level you get punished for it. And you know, you saw with the Martinez, the Argentina goalkeeper, there was one occasion where Mitch Duke almost nicked the ball off him, and it was a similar situation at the other end. And, you know, sometimes these things, you know, you don't get the rub of the green, and I'm sure if Matty had his time again, he would obviously probably put it into row Z. But, yeah, I mean, I think that, to be honest, looking at the game generally, I think that, you know, when we were down 1-0 at halftime, we had to open up, and that's when the likes of Messi, you know, you're leaving space for him, and I think that's kind of where the game was lost, because, you know, if we could keep it nil all going into halftime, I think that the second half would have been completely different, and as the game wore on, we could have frustrated them and perhaps nicked it, and I think that was probably going to be our best chance.
Bridgie, I just want to go off topic for just a second here with Matty Ryan and Kamil Grobara, because Grobara obviously had a dig at Matty Ryan throughout the season when they were swapping positions. Yep. And this morning he's posted, it must have been politics for sure, Matt Ryan, on Twitter. Nothing like a bit of team camaraderie, huh?
Yes, well, it sounds very much like the Belgium camp, doesn't it? Because they've all gone home on separate planes. They're not speaking to each other. And yeah, this is just another tongue-in-cheek moment. I hope Matty Ryan decides to get him in the boxing ring at the gymnasium and they sort it out there. Yeah, because there's been one. The goalkeepers' union is a very hard union to break, and hopefully we'll hear from Mark Schwarzer on this one. There's not many. It's the interesting thing that I've found in my whole career, right? You get competition with strikers, but you've got to build a partnership with a striker, and sometimes you're playing with your front three, as Liverpool have found out. With goalkeepers, it's numero uno. But you always get like a number two and a number three that are happy to come along on the ride and the journey, and if they don't get game time, sit on the bench. Whereas obviously this is the first time in my, you know, in my career I've heard that there's been a huge spat between two guys, and obviously the man of the moment is here himself.
Yeah, Schwartzy, welcome. Thanks for joining us. I know you've been rushing back from the game. What a game it was. We've only just talked about Messi and his individual brilliance and got into Matt Ryan's moment that we said he wanted back. But I just went off topic a little bit because Grobara this morning also posted it wasn't all about politics, and we're keen to get your thoughts on it.
Well, apparently it's not all about politics, is it? it's an interesting one. I was made aware of it, and I did actually have a bit of look on his Twitter feed, and there's been a good mixture of people obviously having a bit of a go back at him. I've never been one to get involved in any of that stuff online. And for me, it just shows you lack of class. It's pretty low blow as well. When Matty's obviously made a mistake in the game. And I just think it's a really low blow. I mean, Matty's not done it. Matty's not said that, made a comment himself when Grobara's had a bad game or made a mistake. You know, he's had an opinion about something. He's made a statement, right? I think it's very poor form, actually.
I think it's grubby too.
Sporty, the goalkeepers' union is in turmoil finally, mate. You see?
No, but like, you know, it's not the first time that happens. And, you know, I think he's given us goalkeepers a bad name because he's obviously a bit on that extreme side. I'd say most of us are not that bad.
Well, let's get back to the game because there were some great moments for Australia as well, and even if the ultimate score didn't go our way. Craig Goodwin having a dig, just sending it. It looked like it was going to, you know, go hit a koala in a tree out the back of the stand there, but takes the deflection and goes in it and changes the game for Australia, really, didn't it?
You know what? I've been harsh though saying it's going to hit the stand up in the stands, because had it have been doing that, he wouldn't have been awarded the goal, right? So the shot was obviously on target, and it's just taken a massive. I actually think it's even a handball. If it doesn't go in the goal, I think it's actually a penalty. If you see the replay, but look, it's a great response, and it was a moment in time when obviously Matty makes that mistake and we go 2-0 down, but we seem to have a little bit more confidence in the game. And I actually felt that we stopped giving Argentina too much respect, because I think we gave them too much respect in that first half. Of course, you're playing against one of the best ever in the world, and every time he gets the ball, anything can happen. He's absolutely magical, and it's effortless. And if you watch him when the ball's away from him, you know, he doesn't do a lot. He just drifts. He walks.
Well, he does walk. He walks
into space. He's my type of player, Sporty. That's my defender.
He walks into space. He's constantly looking for a space to be in, and he does it so casually that people just, I don't know, don't notice it. I'm not sure. It's quite remarkable watching him, and you find yourself almost watching you're watching, you know, a movie within a movie sort of thing. You're kind of watching someone, you just focus on going, what does this guy do? What is it about him? Other than obviously his touch and his movement, and but what else does he do? What positions does he take up? It's remarkable.
Yeah, I think that, you know, that the thing that always surprises me about him is what you mentioned. He's obviously walking, and you know, it's also slow pace. But then in a split second, he just turns it on and he explodes past defenders. And it's that change of pace. And to be honest, the Argentina attacks were a bit like that. Their build up was so patient, and then when they decide to go, they go, you know, 100 miles an hour, and it's just a real flick of a switch. And I mean, obviously we were on the receiving end, which was difficult to watch today, but it's obviously, you know, you have to admire the quality.
I mean, Arnie said it before the game that that's exactly what they expected. So it wasn't something new. They knew they would be coming up against it. But the problem is, obviously, just because you know what they're going to do doesn't mean you can handle it, right? It doesn't mean you can nullify it or prevent it. I think also what caught out Australia maybe a little bit was how Argentina were also happy for us to have possession for large periods of time. They were happy to drop back, and they were, you know, they tried a couple of times to try and nick the ball in good positions, but were outplayed a little bit, played around. They didn't, the whole team didn't push up. And there were moments there where you felt there was a little bit of frustration coming on Messi's face. There was a couple of reactions, but then he just turned it on and it really didn't bother him.
He looked like he was having fun toward the second half anyway. Another great moment that could have turned the game was Aziz Baic's run. How remarkable was that?
Phenomenal.
Do you know what it is? Watching that moment, I'm sitting and I'm shouting, this could be one of the greatest goals we've ever witnessed at a World Cup. And it was that last ditch tackle. He's done everything right. I loved how he took it upon himself and he thought, you know what it is, I'm going for this. And he's almost done a Messi or a Maradona against Argentina. Mm-hmm. That would have been a huge, huge moment. And I was absolutely gutted. I think I woke the neighbours up next door in the house. But it could have been one of the showcase moments in a World Cup. But it showed that Australia weren't scared. You know, they weren't going to sit down and just lie back and take it. And, you know, fair play to taking it to Argentina in that way.
I mean, he did it in the last game, didn't he, against Denmark? He mm-hmm. almost did the same thing, and he almost got that shot away. So and tonight, when he did it, it was just like, I mean, standing up, and as were quite a few Aussies around me, hoping, wishing that he'd get the shot off. But unfortunately,
it was an incredible tackle, you have to admit.
It was a brilliant last-ditch defending. It really was. I mean, if anything, look, if I'm going to be critical, he should have laid it off. But that's the way it is.
Oh, well, you know, all in the moment and right in the moment there, Schwartzy, sometimes.
Absolutely.
You know, you don't actually think, do you? Some of the biggest moments of brilliance come without thought, don't they?
Well, he's like 8 yards out. He's 8 yards out, and what is he going to lay it off? Very rarely will anyone lay it off at 8 yards out. So there's
I don't know. Messi set up one of his teammates who skied a gift of a chance as well. And I remember looking at his face going, I cannot believe I've just given him this gift and he's stuffed it. But then there was the moment that I think we were all on the edges of our seats. Australia was coming home strongly. We thought they were going to pinch the equaliser, and then, you know, we were presented with this moment from Kwol in the 97th minute, and it's one of those moments I think we'll look back on many, many times in history and just think, if only, if only, if only, and wouldn't it have changed the trajectory of the tournament?
How slow did that moment go, by the way, when he had the shot? And as the ball went under Martinez, I don't know whether it was the camera angle that I had on or you had the same one as me, I thought, it's gone in. And then all of a sudden he pounced on it again. It was so deceiving. It was in slow-mo. And I was absolutely, obviously, gutted for him because there's a lot of, you know, we know he signed for Newcastle United over here, and I had a few Newcastle fans going, this is the boy that we've signed. This is our man. He's going to do something. And he almost did it. And I think you could tell by the reaction of the players, just we talked about Schwartzy, when they cuddled Martinez, that showed how much it meant to Argentina. And it also showed a massive respect for the way Australia played against them and given their all.
Oh, look, it was a massive save as well from Martinez. I mean, he didn't have a lot to do in the game, but that last sort of 20 minutes or so, he was heavily involved, took a couple of decent crosses. But that save was huge, absolutely huge for him.
Yeah, I think having him, you know, that's it changes the whole dynamics of the Argentina team, you know, even at the Copa America, you know, you take him out of their team and it's a completely different prospect. And obviously they have him to thank as well for tonight. But I think going forward that he's going to, you know, he's going to have to be at his best if they're going to win it.
Well, it was certainly entertainment plus for the last 20 minutes of that game. Unfortunately, our Socceroos went down. But I want to focus on a couple of quick-fire questions and we'll just go straight across. Tommy, Bridgie, Schwartzy, let's talk about most crucial player to the Socceroos.
I think Harry Souttar in this in this tournament. I think that, you know, he was immense in every game. You know, any attacks he was thwarting. You know, he was just rock solid, and I'm sure that there'll be a lot of clubs monitoring his movements and, you know, his availability now. And for me, he was the standout performer for sure.
Yeah, I've got a second. The second that Harry was a standout for me, along with Craig Goodwin. I mean, Aaron Moy, you know what you're going to get from Aaron Moy, and he's done it yet again. I think there's a lot of times he controlled the play. All the commentators have been talking about and what he's done. But again, another man that really we didn't think was going to start the game was Craig Goodwin. He got a goal in the first game. He's done something again here tonight, and he's always had an impact. So another man I wanted to give a shout, and I think's made an impact for myself for being a standout.
Yeah, look, I agree with both of you. I think both of them. Harry said obviously he's been enormous. He is enormous. He was enormous. I think he bounced back really well after the France game, because obviously there's question marks over the defending, high balls into the box. They got called out a little bit. Him and Kai Rolls. I agree. Craig Goodwin, I thought, was very good. Scored two goals at a World Cup, which is phenomenal. I also think Matty Ryan was very, very good. Yes, he made a mistake today, but I think he was outstanding in the last couple of games. Huge for Australia. And I was very, very impressed with Keanu Backus. I thought he was very, very good in all the games he came on. Even today, I was a little bit surprised he took him off. I thought he was still very, very good. He added a bit of fresh legs, a bit of mobility. He's got something special about him, actually. And I'd be surprised if he still will be where he is come the end of the season.
Sorry, Amy, can I just interrupt you? I've got to say one thing about Harry Suter. And about myself, you said that I sit in the lounger all day today. Well, actually, I forgot about it. I didn't. I got out of the lounger today. I went to watch Sunderland against Millwall in the early kickoff. Sunderland won 3-0. I bumped into Ian Hart there, who looks after Jack Clark now. First thing he said to me is, how good is that Harry Suter boy, by the way, for Australia? And then I went down to Hartlepool for the 3 o'clock kickoff, who got beat 5-0 off Stockport. And I bumped another ex-colleague called Graham Cavanagh. And the first thing he said to me, oh, you're getting back for the Australian game against Argentina. How good is that Harry Suter, by the way? So after the injury comeback, everybody over here has been taught. And so that shows the, you know, how much of a good tournament he has had.
Yeah, but I think he's at a better level than where you went to, Bridgie, mate. He's not going to go to those clubs.
Yeah, well, we can talk about that in a moment too. Schwartz, he's certainly been outstanding. And when, you know, we remind everyone that he's come back from an ACL injury and had very limited minutes under his belt before coming into this tournament. And partnering with Kai Rolls too, who's what, in his fifth or sixth cap for Australia. So absolutely outstanding. They have been in the centre of defence. We'll go back, Schwartzy, Michael, Tommy. Does Craig Goodwin get your most surprising performer of the Socceroos, or is there someone else? You know, stick with Backus.
I probably would. I mean, like, look, I suppose from the players that played the most minutes, yeah, I'd say Craig Goodwin. But I was, like, really, really impressed with Backus. I thought he did really well. Every time I saw him, every time he came on, was excellent. So, yeah, I'll stick with Gooden to begin with, but also Backus.
Yeah. Another one I would like to give a shout to, Riley McGree. Been doing fantastic under Michael Carrick at Middlesbrough, and thought he had a cracking. He was just great in that midfield with Jacks Nervine and Aaron Moy. I thought the way he settled in, and again, another guy that is well talked about and sought about over here in the northeast of England. And I thought he was a standout.
I agree as well. I think no one really talked about Ray McGree. I think the work rate he put in, his control, his one-touch football, his making ability, you know, always wanted the ball. We probably didn't see his strengths, where he has the opportunity to go to the opposition box, have shots from distance. Didn't quite get to see that because he scored some unbelievable goals for Middlesbrough this season already.
Are you feeling all right? Because you've agreed with me twice tonight.
I don't know. Must be something wrong with me, mate.
Tommy, your most surprising performer.
I think for me it was Mitch Duke, actually, because, you know, with Dukie, he's always going to be a player that plays with a lot of energy and, you know, wears his heart on his sleeve. But in this tournament, I thought that some of his hold-up play and his touches and the runs he was making, he really impressed me. And I think that it was well, like, if I can sum up his tournament in one kind of action, it was that layoff he did for the first, I can't remember which game it was, but his goal, actually. It was his goal that he scored.
His first touch. Yeah.
Yeah, his first touch. I just thought that, you know, you always see him fighting and scrapping, but I haven't seen that quality, and I have to eat a bit of humble pie because I was probably not including him in my starting lineup before the tournament. But I was more than happy for him to prove me wrong.
One of the lads I was sitting with tonight said, who's that pest up front? Who's that Aussie striker, the pest? And I said, what do you mean? He said, he just presses everything. He's a pest. And I thought, yeah, that's a good way to describe him. But he's a good goal scorer as well and a good lad.
But I think a lot of us are going to have to eat humble pie. I certainly will have to, because I didn't think Australia would get out of the group. So to do what they've done is remarkable. Pick themselves up after France game, because obviously it didn't go anywhere near to plan. Arnie called it as a friendly game, which obviously it's not a friendly game. And the damage could have been untold. But the way he pulled the team back together again, the way they worked on things and the way they moved on from it was impressive. And I think Graham Arnold needs a massive shout out, because I think he managed the team at the World Cup exceptionally well.
So I was going to go on to a couple of other questions there, but while you've mentioned Arnie, let's stick with that theme for the moment. What does he do now? Does he stay on for the next cycle?
You'd hope so, I think, from a Socceroos perspective. I mean, you know, if you asked most fans maybe 3 or 6 months ago, you would almost put, you know, guarantee that he'd probably move on after this tournament. But, you know, the way that he's brought the boys together, they've obviously bought into what he's doing there, and, you know, with his tactics and these types of things. And, you know, the belief in the team, I think it would be a shame for him to leave now, because it feels like this could be the beginning of something, you know, special. And hopefully, you know, the Asian Cup coming up, I think we could be a real chance for that as well.
The thing about it is, I look at the cycle and the 4-year cycle, and I don't think necessarily keeping the manager on just for the Asian Cup is the right move. I think if you get a manager, it has to be for the full cycle. I mean, that's the plan, because sometimes it can go wrong and you need to get rid of the manager for whatever reason. But I think Arnie would look to move on. I don't think he will stay. I think he'll look at this as an opportunity now to get back into club football. I think COVID took a massive toll on a lot of people. But also, what you said, Tommy, there about the togetherness of the side and everything, there is a genuine togetherness. And I've said it quite a bit recently, or the last couple of days, is that this is not our best team that we sent to a World Cup. If anything, it's probably best players. It's probably one of our weakest group of players we've sent to a World Cup. But they're probably our best team we've ever sent, which speaks volume.
It's that old champion team of champions versus champion team, right?
Yeah. So you're talking about, and that only happens.
That stems from the top, though, doesn't it?
That's right. So that only happens from the top. So for all the doubters and all the critics of Graham Arnold, a lot of people have to hold their hand up and eat humble pie as well and say, look, yes, there were times when probably I was right to criticise, but I think now is the time to go hats off and go, what an amazing accomplishment.
I've got to say, I don't think you were overcritical of Arnie on the choice and style of placewater. You were critical of a couple of decisions, as I was, in the selection, you know, but that's open to every time a World Cup squad is announced, doesn't matter what nation it is, there's going to be speculation and things going, why wasn't that person picked? We went over that. You've never been critical of Arnie yourself, so I think you're doing yourself an injustice.
Are you getting paranoid? Because I wasn't.
No, not at all. I ate humble pie.
I
ate humble pie 3 weeks. 3 weeks ago, I ate it.
No, you're right. No, but we're all intent. Everyone has a right or an opinion on a squad selection.
Yeah.
I've never criticised Arnie in terms of the way that the team have gone about and how their campaign have gone, because I wanted to wait until the campaign was finished. I mean, I don't want to criticise him through it. If that's not how I'm feeling. Of course, there were moments when I wasn't happy and I was looking at it just going, what's going on here? What a fall away it's been, and what a nightmare run it's been. Excuse me. But I think at the end of it, what he did was he qualified, and they qualified through a really difficult path. They did it, and then they get to the World Cup. And yes, we have a major setback against France, but not one that we were so surprised about, really. But it's more about what the effect was going to be. But the way then he turned it around, and the group of players, that only happens. We've all been in squads. It only happens if everyone is together and everyone believes in the path and believes in the messages. And obviously, all these guys completely have bought into it.
That they have, and we could talk tactics all day, but we will keep moving very quickly. Name a player that's getting a big move in the summer.
Harry Suter.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
Anyone else around him?
I think Kai Rolls maybe as well. I think he had a really good tournament, and you know, he's been injured to the start of his career at Hearts. So he started the season off really strongly there, and then was injured in the lead up to the World Cup. But I think this World Cup could give him kind of the platform to go back to Hearts and have a good season. And I could see, yeah, an English team or someone coming in for him for sure.
If Harry Souter's moving, where's he going?
He's definitely going to a Premier League club. He's definitely going to a Premier League club. Where at the moment, I mean, I think there's been some mention of West Ham. There's been a bit of rumours about West Ham potentially. And I could see him fitting in really, really well with David Moyes in that squad. So, yeah, that would be my guess at this moment in time.
Crystal Palace has been mentioned as well, Swarty.
Which, again, would be brilliant because Patrick Vieira wants him to play football, and Crystal Palace has changed the whole way that, you know, their whole dynamics and the way that they want to play as a football team. And that would suit Harry because he can play in any type of system because he's more than capable of playing with the ball out the back. The one player I also think will get a move off the back of this, I'm pretty certain, is Matty Ryan, because he's proven he's far better than being a number two at Copenhagen behind that Muppet.
Here, here.
With the utmost respect, of course. He needs to find a club where he's going to be number one and play week in, week out, have a manager that believes in him. And clearly where he is at the moment, they don't believe in him. And I think he showed at this World Cup that he's more than capable of playing at the highest level, week in, week out.
Anyone else, Bridgie?
Not big moves, summer moves. Riley McGree possibly in the Premier League if Middlesbrough managed to get there. They've struggled really at the start of the season, but Michael Carrick's been inspirational and he's put the faith in Riley McGree. So the way he has been performing, Middlesbrough may get in via the playoffs in that way. So I think that's another one to watch out for. And I'd like to see Juki, I know he's 31, yeah. I'd like to see Juki get a move. He's in J2. I'd like to see him get his move. His family from the UK, and I think there's a lot of Championship clubs. I'm not saying Premier League clubs. I think there's a lot of Championship clubs he could do a job for, you know, because he's that type of terrier attacker that goes and presses. He niggles defenders. He'll go and try and win every aerial battle, and he knows how to find the back of the net. So I know his family are over here as well, so we'll see what happens.
All right, let's talk about the amazing impact that these players and this coach and this group, this team, this brand has had on Australian football. And firstly, I want to ask, what does this do for our ranking? We were obviously 38th heading into this tournament. Argentina were third in the world. You know, we've only gone down 2-1 to one of the top five teams. We've seen a lot of teams above us knocked out earlier than us. What does it do to our ranking?
I think FIFA rankings have always been a source of a bit of controversy. I mean, I'm not sure how the points are even accrued because, you know, you saw Belgium, they were ranked, was it number two in the world, and you saw how they fared in this tournament. So I think
Hang on, not just this tournament, Tommy. Most tournaments, they do absolutely terrible.
It's true, but I think that, you know, ranking aside, I think that the best thing that has come from this tournament is the belief. I think there's a lot more belief in the national team now than there has been.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, well, surely by now you've seen the images of the live sites. We saw Melbourne originally outdoing themselves again today, opening the stadium, but Sydney at Tumbalong Park was absolutely packed out. So amazing to see. How do we harness this love of football for longer?
Well, I think it's going to continue into the Women's World Cup, isn't it? The Women's World Cup is coming. The Matildas have got to grasp it. It's coming to Australia and New Zealand. And, you know, the momentum is going to be huge. I was seeing on a podcast a few nights ago off the back of the Socceroos and coming into the Matildas. We've got to try and maximise it as best we can with blooming, getting as many people and challenging all the other codes and maximising sponsorships. Swarty, I still love what you had said about the regio fees and what kids are paying to play the game. I still think that's absolute BS. That needs to be addressed. And there's got to be ways that things can be done differently and try. And you've got to maximise it. There's going to be sponsors wanting to come on board. Everybody's talking about it. The game is growing. The Matildas, like I say, it was Sam Kerr that got my daughter involved in it when she went to watch it at MacDonald Jones Stadium. playing against Brazil. It's moments like that. So this has captivated a lot of people. Like you say, I've seen the scenes from over here in England about Fed Square and everything. Everybody's talking about in England and around the world the way the Australians have been celebrating in the middle of the night. So it's something's got to be done. I don't know what it is. I'm sure the other lads will have something to say.
I think we can't wait until the Women's World Cup. Even though it's only around the corner, we need to build on the momentum right now. I mean, there's a couple of things for me is that there's a big bugbear. Obviously, you know, the fees is one thing I brought up and had a conversation with, certainly with James Johnson as well the next day, Peter Philopoulos and Will Hastie from the FA. So I had very constructive conversations with them about moving forward and ideas and plans to implement a program to try and help reduce, to actually even provide some sort of program where there's no fees involved at all. But that, and then that's something that I've said that, that I believe needs to be done immediately. But more, I think that's incredibly important. And also the FA to acknowledge that they understand there's an issue with the costs of fees. I also think we as firstly a code, the Football Federation as supporters of the game, people as taxpayers need to put pressure on state governments, because I think the state governments have a lot to answer for, because when you look at the numbers of funding that goes to other codes, it's so disproportionate, it is embarrassing that taxpayers' money goes to codes that have far fewer participants. The funding that goes to them is so disproportionate, it's incredible. And I believe it has to be equal. If they decide that one's going to get one sort of funding, they should be all getting the same. I just think it's crazy that they're so disproportionate and it's allowed to continue that people don't step up and say something. Football's the most participated sport in the whole of the country. So why are people, and it's taxpayers' money that goes to that funding. So why are people not standing up and going, hang on a second? It starts from governments, state governments, to get involved, to make a difference. And the Football Federation need to get on board. They need to put pressure on. Because look what it's done to the country. Look how... It's the only sport that unites the entire country.
So you're better at politics than you are punditry. I'm getting on your bandwagon, mate. Keep talking. This is quality.
No, but it's the only sport that unites the entire country.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at the demographics of the team. You look at... Even over time, from when I grew up to the current squad, the demographics have slightly changed. Of course, that's just the way it is. Migration, you know, immigration, we have that. And we need to embrace it. And it's something that is so encompassing. It's so bringing the country together. No other sport can do it. So I don't understand. It doesn't make any sense to me that state governments in particular, and also state federations, need to have a look at themselves. And they need to get on board. And they need to work together to make sure that we come up to full speed with the rest of the codes, because it's actually unfair. It's wrong.
A little round of applause there for Schwartzy, I think, off the back of that. We do have to talk other games, of course, being played at the Men's World Cup, so let's get back to that. The Netherlands had a very convincing win over the USA. Louis van Gaal's Dutch side have been slammed in the Netherlands for being too boring, but I'm not sure how that really matters now that they're into the quarterfinals.
No, they turned... Oh, sorry, go on, Tommy.
No, I was just going to say, they were fantastic. And I think right at the start of the game, I think it was the first 2 minutes, the US had a massive chance that they missed. And I think they'll live to rue that miss, because after that, you know, the Netherlands completely dominated and they had a lot of chances they could have scored. And Dumfries, the right back, he was kind of at the heart of everything. I think he got a goal and an assist in the end, but... I mean, they've kind of just slid under the radar so far this tournament and probably haven't played their best, but they seem to be growing into the tournament well, and I think they're going to be a tough team for Argentina in the next round.
Yeah, they're not relying on players. They're sharing the goals around, which has been super impressive as well. You know, you were saying Dumfries got one there, the other wing-back got one as well, so it's being shared around. It's very, very impressive, like you say, going under the radar. And I thought they were absolutely magnificent today. They outplayed and they're growing with every game. The first game I thought was so boring to watch them, but they're growing and they're really impressing us. They're a bit of a threat.
I'm looking forward to going to the Dutch press conference, because Louis van Gaal's absolutely he's a cracker. Like, Him always having goes back at the Dutch press as well. I'm looking forward to that. I really am. That's going to be the highlight of my World Cup, I reckon. And I hope he does crack back at one of them when I'm there.
Well, maybe you can ask him about style and substance while you're there, Schwartz, because I feel like this is a bit of an age-old debate. We see it with Spurs and Conte and Simeone and previously with Mourinho at Chelsea. Do you think people should just leave him alone if he's getting the results?
Yeah, the Dutch is different, right? And there's a lot of Dutch, you know, if you speak to a lot of Dutch coaches, players, the Dutch are always critical of their team, always. And Tommy will tell you, the Dutch are super critical. They want to play a certain style of football, and if they don't do it, they're going to be criticised for it. And if they don't have success, obviously they're criticised. But if they have success, they're kind of a little bit... If they've had success but haven't been beautiful to watch and play the perfect football, they kind of get a little bit of pat on the back, but they're still upset because they're not playing the perfect football. And that's where Van Gaal finds himself in.
I think Ajax as well, you know, the way they play, it kind of affects the psychology of the whole country because everybody expects the national team to play the Ajax way. But, you know, they don't have Ajax players and obviously they've got some world-class talent. And we saw in the 2014 World Cup as well when Van Gaal was in charge, I don't think they played their best football, but they nearly won the whole tournament. So, I mean... He obviously has a know-how to get results, and with the experience in the squad he's got, I think that, you know, it's a results business and he's just in it to win it.
All right, Bridgie, let's go to you because I want to talk about Denzel Dumfries. Obviously, he was amazing today. Two assists, a goal line clearance and a goal. He's been absolutely outstanding. We're going to see him make a Premier League move this January, or we have to wait till next summer?
Every tournament, he seems to be the energy to burn. Can he get a move of the way he's performing? Yeah, I'm sure there'll be loads of clubs will be after him. He's fit. He's agile. He's shown he can get up and down. If you've got that kind of athleticism and you've got that, he knows how to find the back of the net, there will be no doubt. And the other one I think we talked about was Gakpo. He'll from PSV, he'll be another one that I think we will definitely see moving to the Premier League or they'll be going to, you know, a massive team in Europe, no doubt about it. But the Premier League is where everybody wants to be. We've got it on Optus Sport, so I think we'll be seeing Dumfries next season, definitely.
Well, a big congratulations to the Netherlands and Argentina with a little bit of saying that on making it through to the top eight. We find out tomorrow two more teams will obviously join them. We've got France taking on Poland and then England lining up against Senegal. Let's start with the game between France and Poland. And Bridgie, you'll just have to wait your turn for this one on England. But between France and Poland, both of these teams coming off a loss. France's, I guess you could say, B or C team losing to Tunisia and Poland being edged out 2-0 by Argentina. I still can't believe I'm saying that when Australia only lost 2-1, that a team that lost 2-0 is going to kick on, hopefully. But anyway, will the champions get the job done?
I think so. I think Poland in the last game was a little bit disappointing against Argentina. And, you know, France getting, you know, Mbappe and Griezmann back into the starting lineup, I think that'll just be too strong.
Yeah, I agree. I think France will be too strong for Poland. They were just hanging on Poland. They just wanted a result to get through. They were just desperate. Mind you, Argentina were absolutely on fire as well. And I think it's great that it was, you know, only 2 days ago that game was. So they're a little bit less intense today, Argentina. But Poland, yeah, look, I think Lewandowski up front scored his first goal at World Cup, which was nice to see. But they haven't got too much else. So I don't think they'll really pose a big threat to France.
I tend to agree with you. This one will go France's way. And then we can talk about England. They've faced African opponents 20 times, including 7 at a World Cup, and they're yet to lose. So the stats really sit on their side. But will they be able to keep that streak alive, or can we see a Senegal upset?
I would love to say with confidence that it is going to be a Three Lions victory, but I've been super impressed with Senegal. You know, Koulibaly, the captain at the back, we've seen him move to the Premier League. Mendy, another goalkeeper. Ismaël Sarr, who I love, he got a penalty. They're very strong. I think the only saving grace for England at the minute is Gaze out in the midfield. He's going to be a miss for them. But yeah, this is a... And obviously Marnie's been missing, but they've proved they can do it without him. So this is a team that know how to win. They've done very well in the African nations. They've done well in qualification for the World Cup. And they've done very well during the World Cup. So I think this could be a potential... they've got to go in the right mindset. England have the players to do it. They go in with the right mindset. So they don't go in with any airs of arrogance. And they go in there and get the job done. But it is not going to be easy. I can see this one being settled in extra time or penalties, to be honest with you.
I think England will win, to be honest.
Love you, Tommy. Love you, son.
Obviously, there's a lot of pressure on the England side, but I think they'll have too much quality in this game, to be honest. We saw, like you said, Bridget just said, Senegal, they've definitely impressed in this tournament. And we saw in the first game against the Netherlands, they played the Netherlands off the park. So it's not going to be, you know, very straightforward, but I think that I think England will win.
I agree. I mean, I think England will win. But this World Cup has already shown us, right, that's not always the case. Who should win doesn't always win. And I think they're in a position where they've got a lot of players who are playing really well at this World Cup. And they had that kind of minor scare, I think, against the US. And, you know, the second half performance against Wales was very good. I just think they'll have too much for Senegal. I can see England getting really far. Like, I can get minimum semi-final. I don't think... I think England are just too good too, and I think they're just in the right place right now, and they've got enough experience. And it kills me seeing Bridgie celebrate in the background. I just find them, they're in such good form, and there's so many good players that are also in the right frame of mind, the right form, and Gareth seems to be getting all the right decisions, all the key decisions right at the moment.
And Marcus Rashford too, leading the Golden Boot race, or equal leading the Golden Boot race. So plenty more goals to come tomorrow, no doubt. And I just can't believe what's happening with Mark Schwarzer and Michael Bridges agreeing on absolutely everything.
Everything with a pinch of salt that this man says, right? I'm not getting carried away because he said Germany were going to win the World Cup and they're on their way home.
I also said Harry Kane would score, be leading goal scorer, didn't I?
Bloody yeah, you hell. Did. You've What's had an absolute there? Knacker.
I have had a stinker.
Can I ask one question to Schwartzy? Because obviously, you know, myself, Amy and Tommy are not over there on the ground. You're actually there. There was a thing we did in the podcast yesterday. I was saying if Socceroos win and we knock Argentina out of the World Cup, it could be Messi's last game for Argentina at a World Cup. Who would get his shirt? Now, he scored the goal. Do you know out the Socceroos camp who managed to get Messi's jersey after the game if he did give it to anybody?
You know what? I didn't even look. I did see Jason Cummings go over to him and kind of like... I think
three times on TV
him.
He tried.
Yeah, I think he asked him. Yeah, there was quite a bit of talking going on and patting on the back, and I think he gave him a cuddle and wanted to give him another one. I think Jason Cummings wanted to take him home, actually. That's the way it looked for me. But I didn't really pay much attention otherwise, because I was obviously quite devastated, because I thought the guys did incredibly well and were so unlucky.
Please try and find out... That's your mission, to find out who got it, please, from the inside the camp, if you're on the ground down there, please.
That's right.
But it's somebody's retirement fund.
Check in tomorrow to find out the answer to that question. And on that note of the cum dog taking Messi home, we will leave our podcast right there. A big thank you to the crew for joining me today. Thank you, Tommy. Thank you, Bridgie. Thank you, Schwartzy.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
And I leave you with the image of the Australian players after the game and the look on their face when it was just oh so close, and we knew how oh so close we've come. But we're very proud of our Aussie boys this morning. Don't forget the Gegenpod is on daily during the World Cup. Make sure you hit subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Rate us 5 stars while you're there, especially while Schwartzy and Bridgie are agreeing. And a reminder that the WSL does continue in the UK. You can get all the games live and exclusive on Optus Sport. I've been your host, Amy Duggan. Thank you so much for listening to the Gegenpod.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.